It is Friday, May 25th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7711 for more information.
Support for KUAF comes from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, hosting the Hudson River School, Nature and the American Vision, featuring landscape paintings depicting a time of exploration and growth in American history. This exhibition, organized by the New York Historical Society, will be on view through September 3rd. Timed reserve tickets are available online at crystalbridges.org or 418-5700.
On this edition of Ozarks, getting locally grown produce to people who need food the most. Christina Thomas reports on the formation of Seeds That Feed. And a progress report from in front of Walton Art Center, where giants made from sticks are taking up residence.
We also mark the 50th anniversary of the Ozark Society, formed as a collaborative effort to save the Buffalo River, and we'll announce the winner of our Wakarusa ticket giveaway.
First, Northwest Arkansas Community College's Board of Trustees will hold special meetings next week to hear proposals via conference calls for the presidential search consultant. The meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons will be held on the NWACC campus. The school will search for a new president who replaced retiring president Dr. Becky Penites. She plans to step down in June of 2013 and has been the president of the school for 10 years.
Arkansas Senator John Bozeman says he hopes Congress can find a way to extend the current student loan interest rates soon. Democrats and Republicans have offered plans to do just that, but neither bill earned the 61 votes necessary to pass. Senator Bozeman voted against a bill that would have raised taxes to help meet the gap created by the current low interest rate. He says both sides of the debate are interested in finding a solution.
Right now, there's lots of agreement that we would like to make it such that the student loan interest rate essentially doesn't double. The question is how do you pay for that? And it needs to be paid for. But I do think it is something that will be settled and in the long run prevent the interest rates from going up.
Another plan would funnel existing money from elsewhere in the government to keep the student interest rates at current levels.
A school that attracts top high school students from across Arkansas will have new residences for the 2012 class. Yesterday, the new student center at the Arkansas School for Mathematics, Sciences, and the Arts was dedicated in Hot Springs. The $18 million facility replaces old hospital rooms that had been converted to dorm rooms. Governor Mike Beebe says the new building will help attract more gifted students to the state-supported school. He awarded the largest single amount of stimulus money in Arkansas, $6 million. To the project.
There were a lot of the best and the brightest whose parents came to visit and who changed their mind about whether or not they wanted to send their bright young people to a residential high school. They changed their mind about sending their students here not because they doubted the mission of the school or because they doubted the quality of the staff and the faculty. They changed their mind because they looked at the living conditions.
The free tuition school was created by the state legislature a decade ago and now enrolls nearly 250 students from across the state. About half of the student body comes from low and middle income families. The governor says the new center still needs about $300,000 for completion.
The group Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families has released a report today detailing the state of access to pre-K programs in Arkansas and calling for expansion of those programs. According to the report, Arkansas has made access to quality early childhood education a priority over the past 20 years, but high-quality programs for low-income families are either at full capacity or funding has been stagnant for years. Research continues to confirm the importance of high-quality early childhood education, according to the group. And according to a recent study, access to quality pre-K in Arkansas has done more to help close the gap between white and minority children and between middle-class and low-income students than any other educational measure. The full report is available at aradvocates.org.
Eureka Springs has once again made it onto American Style Magazine's list of top 25 cities for art. Eureka Springs was the only city in Arkansas to receive this honor, and it was elected in the small cities category, which includes towns with populations of less than 100,000 people. Voted on by readers, Eureka Springs was ranked number 8, and it was chosen for its quality art galleries, festivals and events, as well as the warm welcome extended to art collectors and art tourists. The town is currently home to more than 200 working artists and more than 30 art galleries.
Speaking of rankings, the 2012 recruiting class for the Arkansas Razorback Volleyball volleyball team is ranked as the 26th best in the country, according to prepvolleyball.com. It's the highest ranking ever for an incoming freshman class at Arkansas. Meanwhile, the women's golf team is in 21st place at the NCAA Championships in Tennessee. That tournament's final round is being played today. This is Ozarks at Large. As summer approaches, gardens are blooming and the selection at local farmers' markets growing. A new organization based in Fayetteville is hoping to capitalize on the surplus of fresh fruit, doing something different than the traditional canned food drive. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas met with the founders of Seeds That Feed at the Fayetteville Farmers Market earlier this week, and she has this report.
A group of people drags a cooler around the Fayetteville Square on a sunny Tuesday afternoon. It's closing time at the farmer's market, and they are hoping that the farmers will give them the food that didn't sell. But they aren't begging, really. They're with the organization Seeds That Feed, a new organization aiming to decrease hunger with fresh foods. Co-founder Aaron Shelton says that LifeSource, one local food bank, feeds 1,200 families each month. But yet food insecurity is often difficult to spot in this community. Aaron helped to form Seeds That Feed to combat this problem. They provide food banks with foods typically not given out.
The concept was just an extra plant in the garden, or just like knowing that, just having friends and family that always had like extra harvest and would try to offload it to you, and just using that to get the idea was to get that to the people that really needed it, as opposed to seeing the processed canned food, stuff that we really wouldn't eat, a healthier alternative.
Co-founder Megan Langford came on board with that idea to not just collect produce from professional farmers, but also the at-home grower. It's a concept the group calls care cropping.
Yeah. And we also want to get, you know, gardeners involved so they can plant an extra row or plant just extra plant in their garden, donate all that. Or, you know, it's the middle of summer and you planted 4 squash plants and now you have tons of squash or tomatoes or anything, you know, just come by to the farmer's market and drop it off, and then we'll take it, you know, and distribute it to the different local food banks. So we're trying to get everybody in the community involved, farmers, gardeners, and people who are neither.
Though they will accept donations at any time, Seeds That Feed shares a booth with Feed Fayetteville at the Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday markets. Look for them on the north side of the square, under or near the awning of the old post office. Public donations were lacking today, and as farmers begin to pack up, the group takes notice and begins to make the rounds. Dripping Springs Garden, usually located on the southwest corner of the square, is the first to head out. Mark Kane has set aside some kale and some chard, slightly wilted from the sun, though still great for cooking. He says that it is great to put it to good use, somewhere other than just the compost pile.
I'm happy they're coming around. You know, we've had people try to come and pick up for donations in the past, and the main problem is having people that are on the ball to always make their rounds at the right time to come and pick stuff up. That's the key to getting donations of leftover produce, is having people to come and pick up.
Alyssa Schneider, another co-founder, agrees that timing and consistency have helped their success. She says that now that they have been coming around for the past couple of months, the farmers are getting to know them, some even bringing extra because they know that they will be there.
What really tried to do is just kind of keep an eye out for when they're ready to leave. So I think that's a big part of it. You know, if you just go around, well, you know, some people are ready to pack up early. Some people want to stay a little longer and see what all they can sell. So the timing is also, I think, a big part of it. Just make sure that you get there when they're ready. And, you know, and a lot of times we'll go around now and they'll just start seeking us out, you know. So definitely the consistency and the just being here for when they're ready, I think, is a big part of it.
The group is almost always the last to pack up to leave. They are busy weighing their loot for that day. Today, they are using a large metal postal scale to find out how much they took in. They keep track of what each farmer has given, both for tax purposes, and so the farmer can see how every little bit makes a difference. And today it adds up in a big way to 261.4 pounds of produce donated by the generous farmers, a record for Seeds That Feed.
That was right.
Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
So it's
that's huge.
That kills.
Yeah, our record. Previous record was 165. So.
That puts us at almost 1,500 pounds.
Yeah.
In less than a month, almost.
Yeah.
Or around a month.
261.4.
The group puts the food into cardboard boxes, dividing the greens, potatoes, leeks, onions, radishes, beets, even flowers, between two food banks that will receive the day's goodies. Cooperative Emergency Outreach is one of the recipients. CEO sees about 25 individuals and families between 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock each Monday through Friday. And when Seeds That Feed arrives, the lobby is filled with people. The volunteers are excited to see them. Terry Jay is just one of these volunteers, and though she is thrilled with the fresh food donations, she says it is sometimes difficult to give away.
I couldn't find anybody that knew what kind of greens was it, turnip greens. So I went out in the lobby and I said, did anybody want turnip greens? And this little old lady, she raises her hand like a first grader, and I loaded her down with turnip greens and fresh peas. And yeah, nobody else, the place was full, and nobody else knew what turnip greens were.
Standing in a room of boxed foods and cans, she says it's pretty sad when she isn't able to give this fresh food away. But it isn't a matter of taste.
No, they understand cans. I don't think they understand turnip greens. They don't know what to do with them.
This is a problem that Seeds That Feed co-founder Megan Langford says the organization plans to address.
And then eventually what we hope to do is actually do not just the input side but the output. So do education like one pot, one knife, you know, two spices. How can you take this food and turn it into something edible, because a lot of people don't know how to cook it. So we don't want to just give the food. We actually want to give them a way to make it healthy and a way for them to eat it. So eventually we'll get there.
But the food doesn't go to waste. Seeds That Feed also gives produce to area churches that offer free meals. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
For more information, you can find members of the organization at the Fayetteville Farmers Market or at seedsfeed.org. And later on Ozarks at Large, this year's version of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra will begin to assemble next month and will begin to play music on June 14th. The entire orchestra will play together three times, and smaller ensembles made up from the dozens of musicians from around the country will be popping up throughout the region over a two-week period beginning June 14th. Jason Smith from Walton Art Center helps with the nuts and bolts of getting the more than 80 violinists, cellists, bassoonists, and others to town and ready. For Jason, a musician and vocalist, the enormous task is a labor of love. And he loves talking about classical music as well. He'll help us get ready ahead on Ozarks at Large.
This is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz, every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On this week's program, we'll hear music from Donald Braden, Donald Byrd, Cannonball Adderley, Kyle Eastwood, Charles Lloyd, and much more. Tune in Friday night at 10 p.m. for Shades of Jazz.
Patrick Doherty says sticks can be an interesting medium for art. They can, he says, create some of the same features, like depth, that a pencil can on paper.
When you organize sticks in one direction, you have kind of a mark that looks like it's moving. And so if you have a kind of a depth to it, when you have these outside lines, you read first and then you seemingly, it just adds to a much more three-dimensionality to this, you know.
Patrick Doherty has been organizing sticks for the past several days on the plaza of Walton Art Center in Fayetteville. a sculptor whose chosen medium is sticks and twigs. Patrick Doherty's work in Fayetteville is a grouping of tall structures, each about 16 feet high. They resemble a strange hybrid of human and architectural forms. You may see a gentle giant with a loop for a head, while your friend may squint and see a leaning treehouse.
My job is to build illusions that people feel compelled to go investigate. And so sometimes scale is a big issue. Like, this is a big building, so we wanted something that, you know, dealt with the scale adequately, and also that dealt with the points of view. Like, if most of the audience comes up from the parking lot, so they move past the parking lot up the stairs, and so if you want to make them aware of the work, you almost have to put some bit of this down here at the stairway. And so, also on the plaza, you know, we didn't want to take front and center. We wanted to be a little bit peripheral, almost like there was an adjunct conversation going on to the front of the building.
He's built sculptures out of sticks all over the world. Most of the sticks he's using here are ash. Most have been harvested from land of Friends of the Art Center by volunteers and Art Center staff. Patrick's also been aided in the construction by a crew of volunteers. They've been stripping leaves off the bark, weaving the sticks into each other, and attaching more twigs to the tops of the sculptures from the platforms of large scaffolds.
We've just fielded a lot of nice folks. We've had people from the community and a lot of the Art Center's friends. And, you know, it's great to have an organization that's well-respected in the community, and if they need something, you know, people turn out to really help. So that's been the case. I've been the recipient of that LaGrasse, and, you know, it's been great. And then there's some folks that follow my work that I don't even know about, and they find out we're here. I'm here. They come over here and talk.
Dale Bryan, a writer who lives in southeast Kansas, has come down to work on the latest Doherty event. It's not the first time she's put her hands to work for one of his stick sculptures.
I first saw his piece when I was at Kansas University, and there was a piece there, and then I emailed them to see if I could, you know, get more information, and they've been very cordial. I went to Waco, Texas, and helped him for a week, and went to Topeka, Kansas, and interviewed him.
Yesterday, it was warm and windy, and this kind of work can be sticky. Two volunteers were hauling huge racks of sticks from one side of the Art Center's plaza to the other. Other volunteers were cutting sticks to be just the right size. Still, a few others were engaged in the actual fabrication of the looming stick figures. The dry conditions of late mean the ash that's been harvested can be a bit on the brittle side, and that means these artists are working with a fragile medium. Again, Patrick Doherty.
We're breaking up of these things. If you look around, you can see some of the odd, you know, things that have gone on. We can't help ourselves.
His crew yesterday included Peter Lane, the president and CEO of the Art Center, decked out in a green Artisphere t-shirt and straddling scaffolding with sharp clippers in hand. Patrick Doherty says he gives a bit of instruction, observes a bit, then lets the volunteers go to work. He says most people are better at building with sticks than they realize.
Yeah, well, I more or less tell them about the infuriating tendency of sticks to tangle. And beyond that, we tend to get along well. You know, people know a lot about sticks because it's such an imaginative material. We all grew up playing in the woods, and we have a bit of our shadow life of our hunting and gathering past, you know, connected with us. And so it's easy for people to see themselves working with sticks. There's a kind of fondness for it and a little bit of a reverberation with childhood play and, you know, throwing sticks for your dog or whatever.
What's taking shape in Fayetteville is a theatrical scene of sorts, figures that tower over patrons as they come for a show. One of the twisting columns appears to be reared back, laughing. Another seems to be leaning over to a stick giant companion, perhaps whispering. Each is hollow inside, providing a very personal space in a very public arena. Jenny Taylor Swain, the vice president of programming at Walton Art Center, is helping construct the spectacle.
Yeah, there's very few artists that work in such a collaborative process, and Patrick has it down to a real fine art. And he's amazing the way he involves people and gets you actually doing the work and making differences to the sculpture and the nuances. You're not just moving branches around. As you talk to some of these other people, we kind of rotate work. But that's one of the things I really noticed watching him work and how he talks to people, how he encourages them, how he tells you how to do it, how he gently corrects you when you're not doing it right, or how to better do it, I guess.
The still untitled sculpture will be finished by Monday afternoon and will remain on display as long as the elements allow. Members of the Walton Arts Center staff say they hope they'll resist the heat, wind, and rain long enough to still be guarding the plaza by next year's Artist Fair. However long they last, Patrick Doherty says he wants them to be explored.
I always think the most important part of sculpture is that people like it and that it be thrilling and that it be something unusual that is kind of out of your frame of reference, and then all of a sudden you discover that you might like it more than you thought.
The work continues this weekend in front of Walton Arts Center. You can hear more from Patrick about his sculptures at ozarksatlarge.com. There, you'll find a conversation from last summer when he first came to the region to scout out locations for the work he's creating now. And later on this edition of Ozarks, a very different kind of creation for Artisphere will begin to get ready for this year's version of the Artisphere Symphony Orchestra. That's later on Ozarks at Large.
This weekend, the Ozark Society will celebrate its 50th anniversary with a two-day celebration at the Tyler Bend Recreation Area located just south of St. Joe, Arkansas. Carmen Quinn, Communications Chair of the Ozark Society, says the group developed when several people united around the issue of preventing the damming of the Buffalo River.
The Ozark Society was formed in 1962 by Neil Compton and Doug James and several other people. It was actually formed as a chapter of the Nature Conservancy, and it used to be called the Ozark Society to Save the Buffalo River. And they shortened it, of course, which was a good thing. And they were formed specifically to try to stop the damming of the Buffalo River. They wanted the Army Corps of Engineers wanted to dam it, and the Ozark Society and other people, along with Paul Hammerschmidt, which you may already know, and worked very hard. And in 1972... President Nixon signed the law saying that the Buffalo was our first national river. And that was in a large part due to the efforts of the Ozark Society, and we're still active. Our motto is conservation, education, recreation, and we go on hiking trips, we have classes, and learn about Leave No Trace, and we're involved in other conservation efforts throughout the state.
Following the success of keeping the Buffalo River free-flowing, the Ozark Society has continued its conservation work. During the past five decades, the group has built and maintained trails along the Buffalo River, organized the effort to create the first two wilderness areas in the Ozark and Ouachita National Forests, and helped pass the Arkansas Wilderness Act of 1984 that led to more wilderness areas in the state. The organization has also helped save seven scenic and recreational waterways in four states from being dammed. While this weekend is about celebrating the group's past accomplishments, Quinn says they have not lost sight of the Ozark Society's future.
We had been involved with the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service trying to get an injunction on the fracking, so we're kind of interested in that topic. And one of the second night this weekend the speakers will be focused on the future of the Ozark Society, increasing membership and increasing our visibility and how to grow the organization.
Despite the river being low, Quinn says she hopes the weekend celebration will still include float trips. Other activities planned for the two-day event include hiking trips, potluck suppers, musical entertainment, as well as visits from a member of the National Park Service and a charter member of the Ozark Society who will serve as guest speakers.
Doug James that is going to speak, and he is a charter member, and several of them have passed away. Most of them are gone, are not with us anymore. There are some original members left, but they're getting up in years. But we still have a pretty big membership. We have over 800 members, and we have members in Oklahoma, Louisiana, Missouri, and Arkansas, and there'll probably be people from all of those states coming for this weekend.
Quinn herself became a member of the Ozark Society about 11 years ago. After moving to Arkansas from Georgia, she began volunteering at Pinnacle Mountain State Park, where she met some people who invited her on a float trip. From there, she became involved with the group's Pulaski chapter. She eventually volunteered to help with the organization's newsletter, and she is now a board member. Quinn says the organization is comprised of wonderful people who have a great mission and who have accomplished a lot.
The Ozark Society is, you know, a treasure in Arkansas, and it's a treasure nationally, and the Ozark Society was instrumental in helping it be preserved. So we do want to celebrate that. We want people to be aware of who we are. We'd like them to come to our meetings and be more involved and in helping keep Arkansas, the natural state, beautiful. You know, it's a beautiful place. We'd like to make sure it stays that way. And as I said, one of our focuses is education, too. And, you know, we have meetings and every month, and speakers who talk about ongoing conservation issues in the state. And it's a very worthwhile organization.
More information is available at www.ozarksociety.net.
It is Friday, May 25th, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown. She is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is when Antoinette and I traditionally say, how did it get to be the end of the month?
I know. It's really upsetting.
I'm going to start around the 10th of every month just alerting you that what happens
it's not
next
going to make a city happier.
It's
is the
not.
Chronological passage of
you
time.
Need to, no, you need
no,
to figure out how
that
to make it slower.
Can't be done.
I think it can be. You're just not trying.
What about the near end of May do you recommend?
I recommend a garden tour. Now, I know not everybody gets excited about garden tours. And I find it interesting that we go all the time in New Orleans, but I never go here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to go tomorrow because I've seen one garden. No, I've seen two gardens out of this batch, and I want to see the rest.
This is the Omni Peace Garden Tour.
And the one I saw this year was Hamsa and Moshe Newmark's Bamboo Garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the middle of Fayetteville, and I was trying to find the house, and I couldn't find the house number, and then I thought, idiot, you might look up, because that's 35-foot-tall bamboo.
And probably not every house is going to have it.
No, and they have a whole grove of it. Like, you can wander between the bamboo, and it's amazing. And, you know, people are afraid of bamboo because it takes over.
It's an invasive species.
Except that somehow, I called her in the story a bamboo whisperer because it doesn't grow in the middle of their yard. It grows around the edges. I don't know how she does it. But it's very cool. And it's renewable something like every 3 months.
Oh, yeah. It grows like crazy.
So it's really cool. Now, also on the tour are the Bluebirds of Peace Garden, which is Marshall and Allison Carter. The Wishing Ball Peace Garden, which is Kelly Mulholland and Donna Sternin. They're going to have their ball museum open.
Right.
The Parish Place Peace Gardens, David and Cookie Parish. The Stroll Garden for Peace and Serenity, which is Ann Reichert, out toward Elkins. And I saw hers last year. And it is the complete opposite of the Bamboo Garden. It's like
stone?
Barely contained rustic Ozark gardening with an old barn, and it's wonderful. The Peace Trees Garden, Kathy Boyd. Peace in Our Lifetime Gardens, the Unity Center. And the Omni World Peace Wetland Prairie. And then they've got a little garden at Hartwood Gallery.
Right down the street
right
from us.
Right down the street. It's going to be fun. 10 to 3 on Saturday. Tickets are $10 at Nature's Water in advance or any of the gardens on Saturday, 442-4600. Also this weekend, don't miss Alley 38.
It ends this weekend.
It ends Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Sunday.
Fascinating piece of theater.
Yeah. We went Thursday, you and I, and
Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
One day.
There's a T.
Okay, first of all, if you are infirm and walking bothers you, this is not the play for you.
No. Because
it takes place over the course of an alley and different...
All over downtown.
You'll sit on steps, you'll sit in beanbags, you'll sit in camp chairs, you'll sit in folding chairs, you'll walk up hills.
Yes.
So just be aware.
But along the way, you will meet really interesting characters. The premise is place. Mm-hmm. You know, and how place affects people and what makes a place a home. And in the final moments, I think the consensus was love.
I think that was the consensus.
Really interesting. It's like nothing you've ever seen before. 7:30 tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday night, $12. You meet at the corner of Block and Spring.
Okay.
And also this weekend, they're unveiling the Bass Reeves Monument.
Happens tomorrow.
Kyle's really excited about this.
I am.
So tell everybody who Bass Reeves
is. Bass Reeves was a deputy in Judge Parker's court. He often was sent into what was then called Indian or Oklahoma Territory to bring back felons who had either escaped or committed a crime and fled. And he was an African-American, former slave. A fascinating, fascinating story. The statue, it's already in. Mm-hmm. It will be unveiled tomorrow. And he's looking out on the statue toward Oklahoma.
Wow.
And it's...
Now, the unveiling, the event starts at 10, but the unveiling's
right.
at 11:30.
That is correct,
right?
Yes.
And it's in Ross Pendergraft Park. And if you're into Bass Reeves, there's an event Sunday at the Clayton House Museum at 2 with a reenactor portraying Bass Reeves.
Right.
And that should be interesting. Oh. And also this weekend, there's a Power of Nature talk at 2 o'clock Sunday at Hobbs State Park. So if you're losing your mind like I am, go there and perhaps they can help you find it.
So all sorts of things to kind of find your inner peace this weekend.
Yeah.
Nice theme. I'll take it. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, we recap and state a few changes made to the 2012 Eureka Springs Blues Weekend due to the untimely death of Michael Burks. That weekend is May 31st through June 3rd. Hear all about it on the Generic Blues Show, Friday nights at 9 on KUAF.
In just a moment on Ozarks at Large, I'll talk with Jason Smith from Walton Arts Center as we begin to get ready for the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, Symphony mm-hmm. Orchestra, that will be performing throughout the second half of June around Northwest Arkansas, Solomon Springs, Eureka Springs, Fayetteville, and whatnot.
I missed that last year, so I'm hoping to catch them this year.
Three big performances of the entire 80-plus musicians, then chamber music and ensembles mm-hmm. at other places. That conversation is coming up in just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Before the Artisphere Festival Orchestra
yes.
forms and performs.
Uh-huh.
There's more music in North.
There's
Arkansas.
A ton of music.
There really is. All the, you know, the KUAF Supper Classical Music Festival got underway
last night.
Gully Park mm-hmm. begins next week. Village on the Creeks
uh-huh,
in
the
Rogers
Creek Fest. Uh-huh.
has already started. Opera in the Ozarks will get
oh, yeah.
underway next month. In Siloam Springs.
The second Saturday series.
That has begun, I believe.
The library's having their
right
Mountain Street Music
Festival.
That I'm
series.
Just throwing the name of that right now,
right.
so sorry.
There's just a lot of music.
And a lot of that's free, actually. So
right. Now, not free.
Not free.
But with a lot of music.
Yes.
Is Wakarusa.
Yes. Moved down to Arkansas from Kansas.
Yes.
Like 4 years ago.
This will be the fourth year in the Arkansas River Valley.
And it's done really well from what I understand. I, again, have not been, but yes. I've heard good things. And it seems like it's got a good crowd and they get some good acts and stuff.
They do.
And
they do. Now, I said it wasn't free.
Right.
But for somebody.
It is.
It is going to be free.
But why is it free, Kyle?
Because for the second year, KUAF had a Wakarusa contest.
Mm-hmm.
You entered online.
Yes.
So the winner receives, I think, passes to the whole.
I think so.
The whole deal. And I believe even camping passes. So if you are the winner, you'll find out all the information because Rhonda Dillard, who is in charge of it here at KUAF, will call you
yes.
shortly. And give you all the details. I do know that your tickets are at Will Call.
Yes.
At Mulberry Mountain. All right. So.
And the winner is.
Maggie Peach.
Yay, Maggie.
Maggie Peach of Little Rock.
Oh, cool.
So, see.
Listeners all over the place.
You can get online from anywhere. So, Maggie Peach, your tickets will be at Will Call.
And Rhonda will contact you with all the details
yes.
and everything. And if you have any more questions, she'll be able to answer those for you.
Congratulations. So, Maggie, if you were thinking about going to Riverfest in Little Rock, pull up stakes.
Yes.
And go to Wakarusa. And then we're going to have more from Wakarusa next week.
Yes. So congratulations to Maggie, and thanks to everybody who participated.
John Schlois will be down there reporting.
Right.
In fact, he is actually either in Ozark or on his way to Ozark right now.
For a story.
Talking to some of the businesses that how they are affected by this influx of thousands, tens of thousands of visitors. And you'll hear that story next week.
Yes.
And in just a minute, more about the Artists for Your Festival Orchestra. The music you're about to hear, one of the over 150 bands that will be performing at Wakarusa, Balkan Beatbox. This is Ozarks at Large. We are approaching what is kind of the second half of Artisphere. That is when the Artisphere Orchestra and the musicians that make up the Artisphere Orchestra come to town and perform. And to help us get ready for that, from Walton Arts Center is Jason Smith. Welcome in.
Thank you, Kyle. I'm glad to be here.
The Artisphere Orchestra is literally a once-in-a-lifetime event because this ensemble, this grouping of musicians, will never be together again.
Exactly. I mean, we'll have another Artisphere Orchestra, but this exact group will not necessarily be the same group next year when we have our orchestra back.
And I think – and because it happens in a compact space of time, I think that really – each orchestra will have sort of a stamp in time.
Oh, yes.
There's the 2011, the 2012.
Very much so.
Well, we're going to start getting ready for this Artisphere Orchestra, these performances, by talking a bit about classical music and today about how classical music is really the universal language. I know that's not a new thought, but it's – would you agree with that?
Of course. I would. You know, that goes back to Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, who said, you know, he was quoted as saying, music is the universal language of mankind. And I personally believe that to be true. I mean, no matter what I listen to, I mean, if I need to lighten my mood, I'll put on something that helps me to do that, and that's music. And I use music to help me sometimes get out of a bad mood, sometimes to make me laugh, sometimes when I just need to languish in sadness. Put on something that helps me wallow in it,
right,
if you will. And it really creates the opportunity to kind of reflect on, you know, a language which is expressed through emotion maybe instead of through words.
When I use the term classical music, I'm throwing out a few centuries there, aren't I?
You're throwing out at least 7 centuries.
And that – so, I mean, it could be what some scholars would call early music.
Uh-huh.
It could be Baroque.
That's right. I mean, they're general – classical music is a generic term, and it really does encompass not just 700 years of music, but multiple genres and styles of music, which I like to think of not as classical music, but as art music, kind of with it, they've been composed, or the actual pieces of music have been created with artistic expression, sometimes very specific ideas, others more general ideas, written into the structure, the form, the rhythm, the pitch, the way they articulate, to create something that communicates in a complex, rich way.
But some of these pieces that you might hear an orchestra perform were written hundreds of years ago but can still feel very relevant.
Precisely.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
They're not dated.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I listen to probably 2 hours of music a day, and it varies from day to day, but I will listen to, you know, I was listening to some Gregorian chant today, and that dates back to the 12th century.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also listened to Aaron Copland.
From the last century.
From the 1940s. And very different music. All considered classical music, but both are extremely relevant, you know.
What connects Gregorian chant to Aaron Copland?
This kind of music gives you the opportunity to reflect. And because of the way it is composed, every time you listen to it, you you hear something new. Or if you're feeling a certain way, you can bring that to the experience. And because the music is so broad and rich, it becomes a new experience each and every time. And I think that's how it becomes relevant. I also think that in our modern society, where our world is so fast-paced, mm-hmm. that classical music allows us to sit back and let our minds go somewhere that's not right here, right now, with our phone, with our computer, with our, you know, in this fast-paced world. And it's kind of escapist for me personally.
You mentioned a universal language. Does a similar piece of music affect people in Johannesburg the same way it affects them in Toronto as Fayetteville?
Well, you know, that's a there's been a lot of research on this. In fact, I think in 2009 they took some music to Central Africa to a tribe that of people who have never even heard the radio. And they played different Western music, you know, passages of mm-hmm. music for them. And these people who had no cultural reference identified sadness in music. They identified happiness. And they also identified fear, which was represented through the composition.
If you hear Ride of the Valkyries,
uh-huh.
When you said fear, that's what came into my mind, that that's one that is intimidating.
Oh,
right?
And violent. When I think of Ride of the Valkyries, I literally think of a hurricane. Mm. You know, being in the middle of these nonstop, one-directional winds that just will take, you know, roofs off and waves crashing. And
It's not butterflies coming at you when you hear that.
No, not at all.
Someone might say, you know what, though? I just don't listen to classical music. I don't own a Vivaldi CD. I do not own Wagner. I never listen to it, so it doesn't really matter to me.
That's a true statement, but it's also an inaccurate statement. they don't own it. That's true. But classical music is everywhere in our society, from commercials. Mm-hmm. You know, you listen to the De Beers commercial. That's Dvorak's New World Symphony, Symphony No. 9. You listen to Steak, It's for Dinner.
That's right.
That's Aaron Copland. Even Hagrid's theme. Right, in Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. You know, John Williams wrote that to want to evoke a particular personality from a novel, you know, right. and really the journey that character might take.
The reason we're talking about this is because there are some fabulous performances coming up in just the next month with the Artisphere Orchestra as the big ensemble and the smaller units as well.
Exactly.
The schedule for all that is at the Walton Arts Center. Go to Artisphere, right?
Artispherefestival.org.
All right.
And under Featured Projects, just look under the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. There are dates there. There's also a tab or under a Featured Project, the Chamber Music Series, and you can learn about the different programs that are being performed in the Ife Jones Chapels and St.
Right.
Paul's Church here in Fayetteville. Those are going to be really special. Right. This season.
Jason, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
Jason Smith is with the Walton Arts Center and is helping us get ready for the performances next month of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. You can hear more from the conversation online at ozarksatlarge.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 25th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "Live in the sunshine, swim the sea, drink the wild air." Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. Ralph Waldo Emerson, born Boston, 1803, came from a family of Unitarian ministers, went off to Harvard Divinity School, was ordained, got married, he was happy, became senior pastor of a Unitarian church in Boston. And 2 years after he got married, his wife Ellen died of tuberculosis at the age of 19. Emerson was devastated, began to have doubts about the church, took a leave of absence, went on vacation in the mountains of New Hampshire, and by the time he returned, he decided to resign. Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, "Finish every day and be done with it. You have done what you could. Some blunders and absurdities no doubt crept in. Forget them as soon as you can. Tomorrow is a new day. You shall begin it serenely and with too high a spirit to be encumbered with your old nonsense." And it's the birthday of the poet Theodore Rethke, born Saginaw, Michigan, 1908, to a family of florists, greenhouses in their backyards. Rethke went off to Harvard, started writing poetry, taught at the University of Washington. He was a big man, 225 pounds, tried to talk like a gangster, manic depressive, drank too much, wore fur coats, drove big cars, and was a memorable teacher. When he wanted his students to write a description of a physical action, he told them to describe what he was about to do, and then he climbed out the window, out onto a narrow ledge, and inched his way around the classroom, making faces at every window. And he made his students memorize poems so they'd have something to call on when they were going through a rough period in life. Here's a poem for today by Theodore Rethke, "In a Dark Time." In a dark time, the eye begins to see. I meet my shadow in the deepening shade. I hear my echo in the echoing wood, a lord of nature weeping to a tree. I live between the heron and the wren, beasts of the hill and serpents of the den. What's madness but nobility of soul at odds with circumstance? The day's on fire. I know the purity of pure despair, my shadow pinned against a sweating wall. That place among the rocks, is it a cave or a winding path? The edge is what I have. A steady storm of correspondences, a night flowing with birds, a ragged moon, and in broad day the midnight come again. A man goes far to find out what he is. Death of the self in a long, tearless night, all natural shapes blazing unnatural light. Dark, dark my light, and darker my desire. My soul, like some heat-maddened summer fly, keeps buzzing at the sill. Which I is I? A fallen man, I climb out of my fear. The mind enters itself, and God the mind, and one is one, free in the tearing wind. A poem by Theodore Rethke, "In a Dark Time," from Collected Poems, published by Knopf Doubleday, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the 3 most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by CenturyLink, linking Americans and Fortune 500 companies to what matters most. Learn more at CenturyLink.com. Written by Holly Vanderhaar and produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KUAF is supported by contributing listeners and by Stonebridge Meadows Golf Club, located off Highway 16 East in Fayetteville and welcoming golfers since 1997. Membership information, book a tee time, tournament information, and more available at stonebridgemeadows.com.
The 62nd Annual Opera in the Ozarks is June 22nd to July 20th at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. This season's productions include La Boheme, A Little Night Music, and The Magic Flute. Sunday performances will be held at the Arend Arts Center in Bentonville on July 1st, 8th, and 15th. All those performances at 4 p.m. Tickets and more information available at opera.org.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, South Ozark.
South Ozark is?
South of Ozark.
There you go. I didn't know that existed.
Surprise.
Okay. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Ithi Agnihotri Madulkar and I will be together Sunday morning at 9
yep.
for Sunday or for the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large. And then you're going to pick one for the team. And
take one for the team.
And produce the Memorial Day show.
I am. So Memorial Day. I can't believe it's already Memorial Day. Have I mentioned this?
That is not traditionally. It is the unofficial traditional beginning of summer.
Right. Now, I was thinking about that. My traditional beginning of summer, I think, might have been 2 days ago when I realized that Sonic put up on their little marquee that they'll be open till midnight. That makes me really happy.
Just the last couple of days when I haven't seen school buses,
uh-huh.
that always to me.
Well, I know they're getting close because one of the schools I passed on the way here, they definitely were in their matching shirts, so they had their field day. Mm. So I know we're getting close.
Well, I know Prairie Grove schools mm-hmm. out last week, and I think Fayetteville's last day for mm-hmm. the non-year-round schools
right.
was maybe yesterday. So
mm-hmm.
the pool's opening,
Memorial
Day.
Open, yeah.
And a lot going on this weekend. The Bass Reeve statue will be unveiled Saturday. All sorts of Bass Reeve and music going on downtown Fort Smith this weekend.
Yes. Tonight, I'm going to baseball. That seems very summery, right?
At the Naturals.
Yes, I'm going to the Naturals. They're having a second annual brew fest.
Mm-hmm.
I did not go last year. I'm not quite sure what I'm getting into, but I was invited and I said, sure, why not?
And the Naturals are in town for what is... in total, a 6-game homestand. Mm-hmm. They've already played a couple of that against the Midland Rockhounds.
Yes.
Speaking of baseball, the Arkansas Razorback baseball team will find out where they are going in the NCAA tournament. I think it's a given that they are going to go.
Is it? Because they lost in the SEC.
They went 2-and-done in the SEC tournament, but their RPI is still very high. I'll tell you about what an RPI is later.
Sorry.
That kind of is
I'm blinking
a ranking.
Here. Okay.
It's still very high, and they did finish above 500 in the SEC, which is regarded, I think, pretty much by everyone, top to bottom, is the toughest conference.
So is this kind of like in basketball where like ranking really doesn't have to do with anything? They just sort of – I mean, it does and it doesn't.
That
right. There's a group of people that gets together and decides who's going to be in the tournament?
That does happen. There is a selection committee.
That's what I'm looking for.
Almost every college sport, NCAA sport that has a tournament, there is a selection committee.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, there is one for baseball.
Okay.
All of the conference tournaments will be done by Sunday night. Sunday, the announcement will be made where the 16 regionals will be held.
Right.
There was hope in the middle of the season that Arkansas might host a regional.
Yes.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay.
So Arkansas will be sent somewhere, most likely. We'll find out. The regional sites are announced Sunday. The 64-team field mm-hmm. will be announced on Monday, and we'll find out where the baseball Razorbacks are going, and they will open play
mm-hmm.
Next weekend, so Friday.
Okay, so something to look forward to there.
Yes.
So,
and also, next week on Ozarks at Large, we'll have some reports about Wakarusa.
Yep.
We'll have some reports about the Walmart shareholders meeting.
Oh, my gosh.
The shareholders start arriving Monday and
Tuesday.
That's
very summer.
We'll also have a preview of the Eureka Springs Blues Fest. That's next weekend.
Oh, my
goodness.
We'll
have that on your show on Monday.
Yes, we will have that on Monday. So something to listen to while you're around the grill cooking on Monday, Memorial Day, or hanging out at the pool, or I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet. Hopefully all of those things.
Bringing my parents into town. So
yeah, that'll be fun.
I'm going to take them to Crystal Bridges, see if I can convince them to go to Fort Smith to see the Bass Reeves unveiling. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe bring them by the station. They haven't been by here yet, no?
They have not. They have not seen the
station.
You have
to show them where they work, where you work.
I do. All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening. Have a very safe and pleasant 3-day weekend. Antoinette, thanks for working on Monday.
Sure.
You and I will be back together on Tuesday for a brand new edition on that day.
Yes. Happy Friday.
Happy Memorial Day weekend.